Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back for another OG Show Live. Mr. Randall, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for News.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to, once again, Bass Kayak and Beers.
Brother, this is the final cast.
Another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Palatine.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host, Brad.
Welcome back to the Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Crystal.
Hey, welcome back to Off the Water.
Business. Can you hear with Adventures of Outdoor Woman Podcast?
Hey guys, welcome to the Rusty Hook Kayak Fishing Podcast.
We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, go to eastport.info. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs. I am your co-host, Sean, and with me, as always, is, well, now always, is my co-host, Susie. Welcome back, Susie.
That's right. Welcome back to another episode. I think we got some interesting stuff for everybody today. We do have a lovely guest with us this evening. A lot of you folks already know this fine gentleman, but he is one no other than Mr. Brian Schiller.
What is that?
Hey man, like, you're our guest. I gotta introduce you.
Just take everything she said and flip it 180 degrees, and that's what you meant to say.
Oh, okay, sure.
You're saying you're not lovely? Come on, man.
I don't know about that. No. Good to be here. Good to be here.
Welcome back to the Noob Show, sir. It's good to have you again.
Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime.
Yes, sir. So, yeah, we thought, you know, with it being, is it officially fall? Like, I haven't been even paying attention to, like, dates and stuff. I am so out of touch. No, it's not. Is it? I don't. Well, I know the time change is in, like, in November or something like that. It's, anyway. Yeah.
Thursday, September 22nd is the first day of fall, apparently.
Okay, so we've got a few days. So we are coming head first into fall. So we figured, what better time to talk about the fall transition? Because I don't know about you guys, but I definitely noticed the cooler nights. Even though we've had some, you know, still warm days, looked at the forecast a little bit ago, and Tuesday we've got a high of 96. But hold on to your hats, boys and girls. We have a high of 67 on Thursday, so change is a coming.
I like it.
Yep. Love it. Yep. Water cool temperatures night. Are dropping. Yep. It's causing the water to cool down. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of start hanging up their stuff, whether it be because the, you know, some people, Brian, maybe you're in this boat, but you kind of switch over to more hunting at this time of year. And I know for a time when I used to take my gun for a walk a lot, that was me too. But then I got a dry suit, and, you know, I was like, I'm fishing all year round. I suck at hunting, but I'm halfway decent at fishing now, so I'm going to focus on that. But I have a feeling that's why, you know, the hunting thing is why a lot of people kind of, you know, tend to start hanging things up. But I think it's really a great time of year to fish, and like a definitely a great chance to go get your PB, because, you know, bass start feeding up like crazy. They strap on that feed bag, and, you know, it just to me, the fishing gets great. This time of year is when I caught my my first 20-inch smallie last year. It was like the thing that sucks around here is it gets dark so freaking early. Like I ended up taking my kayak to work with me like half the time, and so that I could at least get on the water a little bit before it got too dark to fish. And but that's when I caught my biggest smallie last year. So.
Well, not only that, like you said, you know, a lot of guys are transitioning into the woods versus being on the water. So you got less pressure too.
True.
You know, while being on the water. So yeah. And I'm the same way, man. The first 20-inch largemouth I caught in a kayak was, I think it was like end of September, beginning of October or something. That transition time where you're getting those cooler nights and things like that up shallow on a chatterbait.
And the Susquehanna, I know historically, year over year, you know, after Labor Day, it seems like a lot of people kind of dry dock their boats after Labor Day or, you know, start packing them up. So Labor Day is usually the last big holiday for river traffic, and the river traffic around here dies off greatly. You have duck hunters and stuff like that. I was just worried about that on Saturday morning. I went out and the guy at the on the shore was like, "Hey, watch out for the duck hunters." And I remembered that from last year. And I was like, "Oh, I got yelled at like five different times, you know, you can't be out here. You know, you're right in my shooting lane." I'm like, "Well, dude, if you're shooting towards me, you're shooting towards the shore and there's a house right there." So, you know,
right.
But,
yeah, I remember they did, the KBF Trail Championship in 2019 was on the Mississippi River, and it was opening weekend of duck season.
Oh, Jesus.
And I remember, Sam Jones was fishing this back bay, and he got there super early, and he was waiting for lines in, and some duck hunters came ripping in there in a mud boat, and they're like, "You better get out of here." And Sam's like, "Yeah, no, I was here first, bro. So, I'm going to fish here." And they were shooting right over his head, man. Mm. Just being a bunch of D-bags.
Jesus.
Yeah. No, I tried to steer clear of it, but I went out like same thing. I went out before sunrise, and I couldn't always see him until I was like, the sun started coming up. I'm like, "Crap, there's one right there. And there's one right there," you know?
Right.
You know, at least some of them have decoys that quack and stuff. So, you know, that something's around there, you know, but, it definitely, you know, when the shotguns start going off, you know, it's a wake up call like, "Oh crap, I think I'm going to go somewhere else."
Don't necessarily need coffee that morning.
No. Maybe some new pants though.
Say, yeah, you better be wearing the brown pants.
Yeah, but that's something though, that's, you know, fall time important, right? Like a lot of people don't think about it. Like you mentioned, you know, you were taking off and some guy mentioned it on shore, and you know, it's something that I used to not really think about at all until that one time up on the Mississippi, and I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be fun," you know. But no, I was fishing in a spot those guys couldn't hunt, so I was all right. But
no, and it's true, and like it's good to at least check your local regs and see, you know, when those kind of seasons start, because I would have thought it was much later in the fall, but apparently this weekend was opening weekend here. So
yeah, next Saturday opens up in northern Wisconsin, and then the following weekend is southern Wisconsin and Illinois too, I think.
I don't know when Illinois opens, but I know like Banner and Spring and Immokalee, like they'll have the signs up that says last day to like, you know, fish out of a boat is like usually around the, like, I want to say the first to second week of October. It's usually like about the 10th or 12th or 15th, something like that. Cause like it's not good to be on the water when it opens for, at least for waterfowl season. Cause you know, they got the blinds up there and everything. And I mean, people are just hauling butt on the water and everything. So most of the time around here, you know, if I wanted to go fishing, and I have to do it before it closes, or I'd have to, you know, travel a few hours to go to a lake that doesn't close, and whatnot.
Yeah. And goose season usually opens around September 1st, early goose. Mm-hmm. So
I just looked at my phone and it says October 9th for duck season in PA. So I don't know what that guy was talking about, but,
goose season might be open over there.
That could be, because I did see more geese than I saw ducks when I was out there. So
Yeah, goose season usually, they usually have an early goose season in most states nowadays.
Gotcha. Well, either way, that was another thing I wanted to talk about because I was happy to have it. I got a new light vest. I finally decided I've had the Chinook forever, and it served me well, but, you know, it has the two pockets on kind of like your chest, and I always put my phone in one of those on the right-hand side, and when I'd cast, I'd hit the corner of my phone on, I still have like a bruise right here. And I just kept hitting it on my cast every time. So I had like a huge bruise there. And so I was like, I'm just going to look for another life vest. And I got an Astro life vest that has just one pocket in the center. Nice.
Yeah.
And it's also blaze orange. So, or like bright orange, like safety orange. So I was like, oh, I'm going to put my new life jacket to the test. And it actually worked out really well. So kudos to, I forget what the model is, but I know it's an Astral and it kind of zips on the side,
yep,
which is kind of nice too. So
it like it's almost like a white water vest or something, it sounds like, or a rescue vest or something.
But it
like
does,
that.
I'll look it up here while we're talking because it's really neat. And it does have a lot of pocket space, you know, because I was looking at the white water ones too, but not a lot of them have pockets. So
Astral makes some great stuff, man. I used to have some of their water shoes. They were super nice. Nice and comfortable for sure. But they make a lot of like rescue, like PFD type stuff, whitewater. I think they're a division of somebody else, if my memory serves me correct. It's like one of those companies that's part of this company and that company type deal, you know? I forget who it is though. And I could be wrong. So wouldn't be the first and wouldn't be the last.
Nah.
But Astral makes some really nice stuff, man.
It's the Sturgeon.
Okay.
So hold on, I'll show it to you here. It's actually fits really nice. The back, yeah. The only thing I don't like about it is that, you know, the Chinook has the high padding on the back.
Sure.
And this one doesn't. It has like it's low padding. Not a lot of padding, but it's mostly in the front, but it still sits. The first time I wore it out, I was like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to like this. And I kind of got used to it, but
that pocket in the front is huge.
Yeah, no. And it fits my phone great. I did throw out a video. I started playing with a GoPro too. Oops. Let's see. Yeah. No thanks to that. So there you can see it. And that front pocket holds a ton of stuff. It doesn't have as many lash points and stuff as the Chinook, but like up in the top, on the top right at the bottom of each strap, there's a knife holder on the right side, and then a spot where you can hook your pliers, or I hook my snips there because I use my snips a lot. So it's definitely working out good for me, and so I wanted to share that just in case anybody. The Chinook was great, and if it wouldn't have been for that bruise on my arm, I'd probably still be using it. But I was like, I got to do something because people kept asking me, what's up with that bruise on your arm? You know, but
my life jacket beat me up.
I think it's just repetitive stress injury at this point, you know. They're like, well, you got to be doing that a lot. Well, I'm like, well, you make a lot of casts during a day. And when you do it at least two times a week, you kind of just get a bruise spot there over and over again. But I digress. So sorry for that little side tangent, but I just wanted to give that life jacket or PFD a shout out because it's working good for me so far.
Tell us how you really feel, Sean.
And it's bright orange, so I'm like, hey, at least somebody's gonna see me, you know.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah.
We should all right. Get one of those for a good friend of ours, Mr. Brock Howell.
Right? Yeah. I mean, even then, like, you probably could have been in a hot pink, bright orange fluorescent boat, and they probably still wouldn't have seen him.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine the panic of, you know, oh, they're going to turn. They're going to turn. They're going to, they're not turning.
Nope. And then you bail out. All right, so we are talking about the fall transition. So, first and foremost, what is happening during the fall transition? Well, you got water temperatures that are changing, which is then going to change how the bass behave. So, you get cooler water, the bait's going to change as well. And the bait are going to, oh my gosh, the bass are going to chase those baits. Now, I know typically if you have, you know, lake access that have like creeks or creek arms or stuff like that, I know that sometimes those are usually some good points to hit up during the fall transition, because usually you've got, you've got current, which brings the oxygen, which brings the food, which is your shad and bait fish. And then, of course, you know, your deeper water access as well.
I know I always think of, like transitions in terms of where the bass tend to habitat. So like in the summer, a lot of times they'll go deeper to find that kind of cooler water. And as that cooler, the water starts cooling off in the shallows, they'll start working their way back. And, you know, so in early fall, you want to take a look at the, you know, the main lake points where the, you know, the main lake water, you know, they'll be moving up from that deep water out in the main lake. And the first spot they're going to hit, obviously, is these main lake points where you're kind of getting into the smaller water. And then as the fall transitions a little bit more, you know, you can start hitting those secondary points back in those creek arms and, you know, those kind of points. And again, they follow the bait fish back there too. So I think that's a really good point and a good place to start when you're looking for them. But
it's like, you know, the spring spawn, but kind of sort of in reverse, but kind of not in a sense when you think about it.
Right. I think they're in the spring, they're moving up. The bass are moving up to spawn, whereas in the fall, they're following the bait fish because the bait fish are moving back into the shallows, right?
Yep. Where there's food, there is fish.
And I know Jeff Little talks a lot about finding those feeding stations next to where the bass stay. So, you know, if you can find a shallow point or a shallow area that's directly off of a deeper part, that'll be one of those feeding stations. You know, if you anywhere the bass still have access to that deeper water, like a channel swing or something like that, is definitely good to look at too. If you can find a channel swing close to a creek mouth, I think that's going to be, you know, definitely a great place to look, because that way the bass can, you know, drop off if they want, or if you have like one of those 96 degree days unexpectedly, you know, they can drop out back to the deeper stuff temporarily, you know.
Yep.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, like, you know, basically you're following the turnover of the lake, you know, rivers kind of similar, but a little different because you got consistent flow through there. So, you know, water temps are varying, but I mean, turnover, basically what you're talking about, you guys are, you know, mentioned it, oxygen, colder water, warmer water, things like that.
Is this the thermocline that we're talking?
Yeah, well, that's part of the thermocline, right? Because like in the summer, usually depending on the lake, you know, for your average lake, like a thermocline is usually somewhere between like 20 and 30 feet, you know, and that's usually when there's not a ton of oxygen below that. So fish kind of aren't very active if they're in that kind of range of the water. And then, you know, as we transition to fall, like the surface water is going to cool. It's going to kind of sink down into the lake. So, you know, your warmer temperatures, you know, are going to kind of be in that shallow area. And then it's going to slowly move. That warm water is going to slowly move to the deep water. That's why when you like ice fish, you're looking for like deep holes and pockets and things like that, because that's where that warmer water is settled at the bottom of the lake. And then, you know, as you move into, you know, spring, you know, because in winter, your coldest water is at the surface because that's where the ice is. The warmest water is at the bottom. So, you know, as you move into spring, that warm water is going to shift from the deep water all the way up to the shallows. And that's why those bass kind of follow that and come up to spawn, you know. And that's why we always talk about like 60-degree water temps, you know, bass should be moved up and, you know, getting ready to do their thing and so on and so forth. But a lot of it has to do with the temperature and where the oxygen is in that water, so to speak.
That makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, obviously in the summer, there, you know, there are exceptions, but a lot of times they do like to go deeper because it is cooler. Like you said, like the Susquehanna, the river where I fish, you know, there are deeper holes, but for the most part, it's mostly the same depth. You can still find them, even if you find like a little 2-foot divot, a lot of times there will be fish there because, you know, it's just something different. But for the most part, you know, we're talking more lakes at this point because, you know, I think that follows the pattern a little bit more of deep to shallow movement than the rivers, at least the rivers around me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Like in the summertime, you're going to find fish in both shallow and deep, but it almost seems like, I guess, statistically, like you're more prone to find some of those bigger fish out deep in the summer, whereas you're going to find those bigger fish up shallow come fall because they're up feeding because, you know, they're kind of getting ready to put on that feed bag. When that water gets so cold, basket super lethargic, they kind of just sit at the bottom and they'll wait for food to come to them or they just won't eat. Mm-hmm. And that's why they kind of fatten up in the fall, and you can get on some really epic bites, you know, in that fall time when they're just munching, gorging, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've found like over the past few years when I got into this like deep, like kind of offshore fishing, like I've noticed the bass do that a ton when they're offshore in that deep stuff too. Like they're doing that all year round because I'd say 98% of all the fish I catch are bloated. Like they've been like, gorgeous. Like they're getting ready to move up, you know, and spawn, like they're fat like that and just, you know, whatever. So, you know, I think what you get is a lot of those fish that stay up shallow, plus the bigger fish kind of all move in. They pin that small, those smaller fish and, you know, just start chomping. And then you'll see a huge shift where all those fish kind of scatter out of the shallows and back into the deeps as like ice starts to form. And, you know, granted, we're talking about up here in the north, down south, you're going to kind of see the same thing, right? Like, you know, I've talked to Adam Reiser, like he's fished smallmouth in 40 to 80 foot of water in, you know, winter basically, or early spring and down on Galahala Lake. And he's like, you know, there's fish down there. You can mark them all day long, but sometimes it's really tough to get them to bite because fish are so lethargic at those cooler temps. You know, you almost have to hit them right on the head with your bait in order to get them to bite. So,
yeah, I think I remember talking to a fish biologist and he was saying about how their metabolism slows down so much that they don't have to eat as much. So, like there might, you know, when if you follow like the salooner times and stuff where you have like two main feeding times a day or in the winter, that might, you know, slow down to one or, you know, maybe a couple days, you know, where there's a they only feed very rarely, you know. If you happen to catch them during that time, that's awesome. But other than that, it's going to be tough. And like you said, you're going to pretty much have to smack them on the head with it to get them to eat it.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, you know, I ice fish a lot and I could probably count on both my hands how many bass I've caught over those years of ice fishing. How many bass I've caught, you know, compared to like bluegills, crappies, you know, panfish in general, your walleyes, your northern pike, like they're still active in that colder water. It's just bass, you know, are kind of like a fat old man, you know, like they get super slow, want to do much in the colder weather, you know, come warmer water, things like that, then, you know, you start to see them move around a bunch, you know?
Right. And I know I like there's a point where like shad or bait fish can't live in certain temperatures of water. I think so. When they start dying off is when the bass also start really feeding. And then, as soon as that happens, because I from what I understand, like when you're fishing a spoon, that's what you're really imitating, right? Is you know, those shad.
Yeah.
As they're, the water's getting so cold for them that they're just kind of slowly just dying and falling, fluttering down, you know.
Sure.
But then after that, after all the shad die off, then that's when they're kind of like, okay, well, now it's the doldrums of the winter. So,
well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you got to think about it like, you know, with those shad, you get a big school of shad and they just all start kind of fluttering and croaking, man. That's like free food, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, they don't have to work hard for it, whatever. Versus, you know, when they're lively, you know, they're having to chase them around and things like that. So they can just kind of sit below that ball and just open their mouth, you know, like catching snowflakes, right? Like in your mouth, you know, it's kind of the same thing, except they're catching shad, you know. It's it's snowing shad for them.
You know what I mean? Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect analogy because, yeah, that they're really looking to conserve their energy at that point as much as possible. So, you know, they don't want to necessarily have to chase something down or hunt it. So if they can take advantage of that kind of free energy, low energy pursuit and just kind of slurp stuff as it falls to them. I think that's why when you mark bait balls around that time of year, a lot of times you will see bass just hanging out below them, not necessarily running through them or like, you know, trying to really attack the bait ball, but they're just kind of picking off the ones as they fall down.
Yeah. They're going for that easier meal, trying to conserve their energy and, you know, just get that free snack that they don't have to work for, you know?
At least the bigger bass, you know, the smarter, older ones, you know, the little energetic pup ones are still flying around.
Oh, they're still, yeah. They're earning their keep, you know?
That's right.
I mean, it's interesting, like, when you think about it that way, right, and then you kind of put that into baits, right, you mentioned the spoon.
I was just thinking that. Yep.
Jigging and fluttering that, and they're hitting it on that downfall, right? So, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, you know, everybody's going to say go throw a jackhammer. Obviously, that works, right? But at any point in the year, I mean, it's, you know, almost cheating, like 360 or live scope or something, but
he went there. Yeah,
I'm just throwing jabs out there, you know. But you know, it's that downfall, that flutter that gets them. So like, you know, and they're chasing bait, right? So like, in my mind, I instantly go to, like you said, the spoon, a fluke, like a Texas weighted fluke. Or maybe slightly weighted, so it's getting down a little bit deeper, depending on where they're at in the water column. Like crankbaits, you run in crankbaits, you run them, pause, and let them sit, and then run them. Same thing with jerkbaits. Like, you know, these are all the bit, you know, you want to throw like a bait fish kind of replication, but I think that pause in there is the key for fall fishing. You got to definitely have some patience. And definitely use that pause to your advantage because that's when they're going to hit.
Well, and I know I go back to it a lot because it was the first time I saw it done when we were filming the noob or not the the Pelin Fin where we challenged each other.
Oh yeah.
And I remember I was kind of just doing the stuff while Brian, you were fishing. I can't remember who you were fishing against, but. You were yo-yoing. You were yo-yoing a jackhammer, you know.
Yeah.
So that is really kind of doing the same thing that a spoon does at that point. If you know, and you know, not a lot of people work a jackhammer that way, but I think in this instance, I think it can work really well. I think
sure. That's
a perfect application for that.
Totally agree. Another one I like to use is a spinner bait, double willow leaf spinner bait.
Yes.
Silver in color, usually depends on the water clarity, but like sometimes I'll pause those, but more than likely, if you just kind of slow roll those off the bank, you'll get slammed, you know, quite a bit. You know, that's a great fall bait.
You know, you still got some top water action too. Like if you're slow rolling a plopper, or like slow rolling a buzz bait, dude, I almost matched my PB bass on Banner October. Oh gosh, what year was that? I think it was like 18 or something like that. It was October shortly before Banner closed. And I was slow rolling a black whopper plopper in kind of some shallow area. And this bass slurped it, but I thought I got caught up on the weeds.
Sure.
Because it just was like, there was no explosion, anything like that. It was just a, and I like hooked on it, and then like nothing really happened. And then it, you know, kind of swam. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah, and especially in the evenings, right? Because that's where your warmer water is going to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now you're back to that, like, same spring tactic of you're following warm water. You always hear guys like, you know, I went out, I was searching for warm water in the spring because that's where fish are going to spawn first. That's where fish are going to move, things like that. So now you're kind of looking at the same thing with the cooler nights. The water temps are cooling way down. As the sun's up during the day, it's warming up certain parts of the lake, you know, and, you know, more than likely your west shore is going to be the warmest by the end of the day, because that's the shore that's getting the most amount of sunlight throughout the day. So, you know, something to consider too, when you're looking at spots on lake where to fish, or a river for that matter, you know, that west shore versus the east shore may be a little livelier because it's, you know, retaining warm water. Fish are going to kind of follow that, you know, going back to what I was talking about earlier with, you know, water temps and oxygen levels and things like that. That's what bass are following.
That, and, you know, if you don't have a lot of, you know, structure, or if you're not sure where to kind of look for bass, maybe sometimes in the mornings as well, is look for your submerged logs, look for your bigger rock piles, because, you know, those things will soak up the heat of the sun, and, you know, the bass will congregate by them, you know, towards the end of the night and probably hang out there in the evening, staying warm, and then, you know, morning comes and move along, go about their day. So look for...
Same thing with docks.
Yes.
Docks are a huge thing. Like, this is a great time to be dock fishing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where you're throwing that Texas rigged fluke, you know, or nose hooked, you know, just running it, letting it drop, running it, letting it drop, like, dude, killer bite.
One of that those. And a lipless.
I was just gonna say that. Yep. And I was actually, that's what I caught my the bass on the 20-inch smallie last year, and I remember thinking, you know, I'd shied away from lipless for so long because I was like, well, there's no bill to deflect off anything. I'm going to get this thing snagged left and right, man. Especially, you know, the Susquehanna is really rocky. But it, for whatever reason, it goes on the nose. Like, I wore the nose off of a lot of my lipless.
Oh, I bet.
But it really didn't snag up that horribly. And that's another bait that you can yo-yo, just like we were talking about.
Sure.
You can bring it up and just feel that vibration up and then let it drop. And then just do work at that back to the boat that way. And I got hits on that last year, the same thing.
And that's huge. That's your huge in dirty water too, because you get that rattle with all those BBs in there, man. And fish, I mean, it just drives their lateral lines nuts, you know, it just sets them off, you know, especially that time of year. You know, they'll just come up and hammer it just off that vibration alone.
Yeah, and I was at that point last year, I was ready to buy stock in Rattle Trap because, you know, holy cow. I was like, these things are magic, you know. And the grass, you know, starts dying down too a little bit at this point. And so you're not getting snagged as much, but that's also not horrible either if you do get snagged a little, because you can kind of rip that out of the grass and get the strikes from that too. So
yeah, a lot of times you get that reaction bite when you're ripping it out of the grass, man. You know, it's just all of a sudden, you know, the fish seems something comes shooting out of the grass like that, and they're like, oh, food, you know.
And that actually kind of saved me last year. What, you know, we were talking about that duck hunting time, and so the duck hunters were all along the duck lines along the shore.
Hey, man, easy on the duck hunters.
No, I know they got to do their thing too. But
that's right.
So
that's
ended up going out mid-river and fishing the grass flats at that point because I wanted to stay away from the shore. And really, that's what really saved me in fishing those grass flats was running a lipless and just ripping it through that grass. And, you know, I was able to still find and catch fish and keep my numbers going, you know, when I couldn't be close to the shore where I really wanted to be because I was trying to stay away from those guys.
I just want to throw out there, like, you know, duck hunters, they have to use steel shots, so it's not like you're going to get lead poisoning. It may sting for a minute or two. You'll get over it. It'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Chick Sig scars, I guess. You know, that kind of thing.
Most of it's steel shot, maybe copper plated.
Okay, okay.
You'll be okay. You'll be okay.
It's just a flesh wound. You're fine.
I'm just going to opt to stay away. I'm going to, you know. They took it pretty serious, like, so I definitely didn't want to mess up anybody's hunting because I know, you know, I can fish the river most of the year and they only have a 2-week stretch or whatever that they can hunt.
See, I wish everybody would be conscious of that like you. That's why you're all right, Sean.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
We get 60 days. You get all year. But yeah, no, that it, you know, you get a lot of reaction bites, so all your reaction baits, things like that, don't overlook topwater. Totally agree with that. You know, it's, I've had some killer times, especially when you get like a real nice overcast day and some wind, almost to the point where it looks like it's just going to storm. Like, I had one of my best topwater days ever on a crummy day like that.
Yes.
Throwing a black buzz bait around docks. And I can't even tell you how many fish I caught over 18 inches. Just like, and it was like one after the other. And I was fishing with Jay, actually, and Scott, who I started the podcast with. It was the three of us. And those guys caught like 1-2 fish. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm throwing a black buzz bait, dude. And they're like, what? Like, I wouldn't even think to throw it, like, on a day like today. And I'm like, I wouldn't either, dude. But I had it tied on, and I threw it once, and I got bit, and I kept throwing it. And, like, it really opened my eyes because you always think, like, top water, those nice sunny days, flat calm. You know, it's, you know, the blades are going to churn in the water the right way, things like that. I mean, there was actually, like, you know, 1-foot rollers on the lake, and you know, just running that buzz bait through there around those docks, man, it fired them up because the air temp was cold, but the water temp was still warm. And it was right about this time of year, you know, and there's something about that, you know, cooler surface temp on the water that just really fires them up and has them looking up, you know, towards the surface.
I know, so just in the past 2 weeks on the river, the Whopper Plopper has been performing well for me. Phenomenal. Like I said, I started playing around with that GoPro, and I threw a video out on my Facebook page of one of the Whopper Plopper. You know, and the Whopper Plopper gets a lot of hate, but I'm sure. Like, it really lets you cover water. It stays above the grass. You know, it. You know, last year I fell in love with the Rico Plopper, but this year for whatever reason, I'm not getting bit on the Rico Plopper, but the Whopper Plopper, it's getting them right now. So.
You always got to change it up, man. It's weird how that all works out, right? Like, one year you'll slam them on this, or you'll slam them on this particular color. The next year it's something like completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we did that shaky head episode earlier in the year, and like last year the color was black. This year couldn't get bit on black. You could here and there, but like not to the extent we were getting bit on green pumpkin. Like, mm-hmm. Two completely opposite colors. It's like, what the heck? And the water clarity was pretty much the same. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Actually, it might have been even a little clearer last year when we were throwing black so much. Mm-hmm. So it's weird, you know? Like, and it's the same way, right? Like, you know, I talked about spinnerbaits. Like, one year, white is really good. The next year, you have to have some chartreuse mixed in. If you don't have that chartreuse, like, you know, it just, you weren't getting bit. It was, it's weird how, you know, colors and things like that, and even blades, you know, colors of the blades can play a different role from year to year. That's why it's so nice to have a variety. And guys, you can use that and go tell your wife, like, hey, I got to buy this color, that color, and this color, because Brian said, you know, it might change. So,
that's why Brian brings 6 tubs of stuff when he travels.
See? See?
Yeah, right. See?
You understand now. You understand the method to the madness.
Mm-hmm. And another thing too, though, that I've also trying to pay attention to the last couple of years is, you know, like the different weather patterns during, like, you know, the different kind of transition of seasons, sure. You know? So like from late winter to early spring and then late spring to early summer, you know, those kind of big transition periods. Cause like, you'll have things where things are kind of unstable, but then they kind of plateau for a while, then they get unstable, plateau for a while. So the last couple of years around here, our springs haven't been quite what they used to or what they usually are. So like
you go from winter to summer.
But like one thing that I've really noticed though in the last, I'd say like at least 3 years, is we aren't getting as wet of springs
sure.
as we used to, because I could remember, gosh, year after year after year, every spring from like late March to early May, I would get those stupid alerts on my phone about flood warnings, you know, sure. because I'm close to the Illinois River,
yep.
you know, and I'm like, you know, I really haven't gotten those in the past few years, you know, climate change, season changes, you know, whatever you want to call it, but those definitely have, you know, bigger effects on things. And as Brian was saying, you know, sometimes there's years where, yeah, they just, you know, this spring, you know, they whacked the jackhammer like none other. And then the next year, it's just like, they wouldn't even touch it, you know, yeah. the same yeah. months during the same, you know, weather types or temperatures, you know. And so I think a lot of other things that have to do with it is just the way of the changing seasons as well. And even sometimes with, you know, how much snowfall we got as well, because sure. this late winter in February, we got the most snow in like a 4 week time frame than we had in like a few years. There was one day where we got like a foot of snow and it had been.
Yeah, you guys got hammered down.
It was insane. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas we got like next to nothing up here by me. Yeah. It's crazy what 2 hours difference will yes. do, you know?
That is crazy.
Yeah, and then what was it, a few weeks later, you were just like, what is it with all this snow? Because yeah. you had gotten snow,
yep.
but we were still kind of warm, and it was just like, what the heck is going on? But like, I've really noticed how, you know, weather patterns have really changed in like the last probably 4 or 5 years around here, you know, because the springs are different. You know, I remember when we would get, you know, these massive thunderstorms that would kind of roll through and we would have like tornado warnings and everything sure. in the spring. And now it's just like, we barely get them, you know, we barely get, you know, the flood warnings anymore. So I'm like, well, that's definitely having an impact on everything. And, you know, each spring when I'm out at Banner, I'll notice that, you know, the water levels are definitely different, you know? Sure. So I'm like, this has got to be messing, you know, changing the way fish behave as well.
Yeah. It seems like lately, I'd say over the past 6-7 years, like, you know, springtime, the water's either super high or super low. No, mm-hmm. like happy medium. Like
yeah.
there was a few years there where like, we couldn't fish the river here till like June because it was just raging so
flooded
much, you know.
Yes.
And it was consistent rainfall, whereas like, you know, we were talking earlier, like we just got a ton of rain last weekend, so the river was just raging. And then there's a river down the road from my house, but there's also a creek that actually drops into the river, and that creek overnight went up 5 feet. It was flowing over the banks, you know what I mean? Because we got, I think it was like 3 inches of rain or something. Whereas like the summer, we'd have like little spurts here and there. Like mm-hmm. it was nothing like major, maybe like 2 or 3 storms. But like other than that, it was like, oh, it rained, you know, like it lasts 20, 30 minutes and that was it. And it was okay for the crops, which was good. But like, you know, it never really affected the river. Like Sean was talking, you know, his river was super low. that's how ours was all summer. And then all of a sudden we've been getting all this rain, and it's just up and running, you know? And, I definitely agree with that. But, what it made me think of is, do you, either you guys like keep journals of like, you know, water temps, air temps, you know, dates, things like that?
I wish I did, so I could look back on everything. I kind of want to make that a goal for next year, just to kind of like start tracking, okay, you know, the date, the time, weather, water temps, you know, that type of thing. And just, you know, kind of start keeping a better log of everything. Cause you know, can't say, you know, I wish I could have done it. I mean, nothing's going to change that, but you know, at least going forward, hopefully it'll help me learn better too.
Sure.
I actually, you know, I know the Angler app does some of that for you. Mm-hmm. But after we had interviewed, I think it was either Juan Brood or Jeff Little, one of those guys showed us like his pile of logs for from ever. And what made me start actually doing it was when Ryan and I started that competition that we have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I'd started I kept a notepad on my phone of the day, how many bass I caught, and it just kind of evolved. And that's still now actually what I use. So when I get home from fishing, I always write down in that notepad. Well, I have one for 2022 now. But I wrote down, you know, how many fish I caught, you know, the sizes, what baits I used, the water temperature, air temperature, and, you know, general weather conditions. And, so that's what I've been doing. It doesn't translate very easily to anything else because it's just notepad on my phone, but it still allows me to look back.
Do you make note if like there was like a storm front or like the day before or anything?
It depends. Yeah. Like if it's something noticeable, like I'll write that, you know, water was, you know, chocolate milk or something like that, or water level was high or, you know, extremely low or something like that. Yeah.
Do you follow the moon cycles at all?
Not generally. Like I have an app that does it. So usually before I go out, I'll just look to see what it says. But I can't say that I've ever, I mean, really been like, there's been days where the app says, oh my gosh, it's going to be an epic day because the feeding time, the salooner times are perfect and it's a full moon. And then I go out and do nothing. And then there's times where it says it's going to be a terrible day. And then I go
swim.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I started up my log again this year. Like I used to do it years ago when I did a bunch of night trolling on Lake Geneva. I would keep a log throughout the year. But this year I found my old book, and it's just like a little black, you know, small. It's almost like the size of this notepad. And I, same thing, man. I write like fish the morning, fish this area. Air temp was this, water temp was this, partly cloudy or, you know, sunny, bluebird skies, things like that. And yeah, if there was any major weather event, like, you know, recently or something like that, then I usually like scratch that in there. But it's nice to kind of be able to see like, okay, like come next year, you know, moving into the spring and summer and then fall again, like, okay, last year when the water temps were this and it was this kind of condition, this is where I was catching them and this is what I was catching them on. I think it gives you a great starting point to approach that day, so to speak, you know, just being able to go back and look. And then, like, especially for me, like, the important thing I wanted to do is, like, all right, the spawn seemed like it was over at this time. And then you usually have, like, a 1 or 2 week lull where those fish are just kind of roaming and trying to find their way to that deeper water that I like to fish. And then bam, they're there. So I can kind of keep track of like, all right, now my offshore bite's going to be on and things like that. So, yeah, it's kind of cool to be able to go back and look at that stuff. So I encourage anybody to do that.
I think, like you said, just grabbing a little notebook and like keeping it in the console of your kayak or wherever you can, even in your tackle box or wherever, and just, you know, jot down that information, you know, and that way you can look back at it. Now, again, like you said, there's times where like last year the Rico killed it for me and this year it's not working. So, you know, things do change and they always say don't fish history. But, you know, there is something to knowing at least, you know, what the bass movement was like. And, you know, it's like you said, it's a good place to start anyway. You know?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're 100% right. I think like lure may not be the right thing, but you should kind of know where those fish should be, you know, like the general area, you know, are they out deep? Are they up shallow? Like things like that. Or, you know, vice versa. Like I write down, even if I have a bad day, right? Which doesn't happen very often, just saying. But
pants on fire.
But even if I have a bad day and I only catch one fish, all right, well, I caught one fish out deep. Well, okay, obviously they're not staged up out there. So next year about that time, or, you know, or similar conditions, I'm going to go try shallow versus deep because obviously I didn't have a great day fishing deep. You know, it's again, it's just a great like starting point, or you know, you can kind of see like right now, you know, you can kind of see that deeper bites tapering off. Fish are moving up shallow. Okay, well, what were the conditions like last year when those fish started to shuffle back up shallow, you know, to get their fall feed bag on, you know?
And I don't know, the lakes around you guys, do they do drawdowns? I mean, when does that, like, none of the lakes around me do that for the most part. I have the one lake actually closest to me right now. They did draw it down, but that's because the adjoining lake that it drains into, they're replacing the dam on it. So they're keeping it artificially low. But for the most part, they don't do lake drawdowns around me. So I don't know.
I don't think I have anywhere in my area that does that. I think a lot of times when you do see that, it's on some sort of river system, like when they draw down like Chick and
Gunnersville
and all that stuff. Yeah. There's an actual river running through there. And a lot of times that's ready for the spring runoff, you know, those spring storms we were talking about, the snow melt making its way down, things like that. You know, and they kind of draw down like river pools sometimes like that, you know, getting ready for that, you know, springtime, because that's usually when you see a lot of water coming. But up here by us, like we don't have anything where they really draw it down like that. Nothing like super major. I don't even think they draw down the Madison chain.
Yeah, so I don't think they do either.
Or the Wisconsin River, like, because you got Lake Wisconsin's part of that. Like, I don't think they draw that down.
No.
Delavan's got a river run or a creek running through it, but they don't draw that down. Yeah, I don't know of very many places up north where they do that. It's usually down south at Tennessee.
Yeah.
Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, all that stuff. I think they
Missouri does a little bit too, because Table Rock go into
Well, they had it where all those lakes were full. What, 2 years
ago? Yeah, because they had insane flooding. Yeah.
I remember we were fishing in people's backyards in 2020.
Well, that was the first women's event. That was in 2019, I think, or 2018. Because when I drove down there, it was just like a wall of water the whole way down there.
I think it was 2020, because I fished down there in spring, and then you guys were down there over the summer, right?
Well, we weren't there in 20 because of COVID. It was 2019 is when we were down there in Missouri. But yeah, I know all those rivers and lakes are all connected, and then, yeah, they affect everything, like, dramatically down there.
Yeah,
I was going to say,
couldn't let Table Rock come down because Tenikomo is the next one, and that was max. And then the one below that was even over max. So it was like they had nowhere to let the water
Let the water out. Yeah.
Wow.
It was crazy. Insane. Yeah. Yeah. Dang it. What was I going to say now? Oh, yeah. I was going to say, you know, for all the techies out there, you know, next thing you could do, you know, if you don't want to take a paper and pen out there, you know, just take like your little microphone recorder out there and be like, okay, today is Tuesday.
March. Captain's log.
There we go. Yeah.
Captain's log there's for 9/25/22.
Life anywhere.
Didn't he do that on like X-Files or something like that?
Oh shoot.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it in a number of different things, but it's a good thing to have to kind of keep track of those trends. I think that's why I brought it up, was just being able to track trends and kind of, you know, giving you an idea or a ballpark idea of what to look for, you know, the following years.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think I, if I remember correctly, I after my angler button died, I stopped kind of using it, but it for a while, like looking back over that, it does log all that stuff for you automatically, you know?
Well, can't you export that data out of there and like have it saved on like a spreadsheet or something like that?
I'm pretty sure you can. Yeah, I think you can. So
interesting.
Yeah, because it saves it as trips, and I think you can just export your trips. So
gotcha.
The one I had is at the bottom of banner.
I was on number 3 when my third one died. So.
Oh no!
Yeah, I forget where mine is. I think mine's in the bottom of Dale Hollow or something. Yeah,
I don't know. I wish they would kind of integrate that. I'm sure they might already, and I just haven't taken the time to learn how to do it. Is you know, integrate some of that into you know, the fish finder that you use too. Because sure. I know you can record, you know, the water temps and depths and all that stuff, but like, it'd be really cool if like you could also somehow collect like the local, you know, weather too.
I that's got me curious. Cause like, I wonder if, cause I typically when I'm fishing, if I catch a fish and it's on a new body of water, I'll mark the spot. Right. And I know it'll give you the data for the date and time. I don't think it'll save water temp. Obviously, it's not telling you what the weather is, but I'm curious if it would save water temp at that current time when you save that waypoint.
When you saved it, right.
Or if there is a setting for that, because that would be, super badass to go back and look at that and stuff.
Just, yeah, import that too. Yeah, because I mean, yeah, mine's got some SD card slots that I can just stick a little memory card thing in there. And whatnot.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm gonna have to play with my settings and whatnot this winter. I got a lot of projects to do this winter. I mean, it's been 3 months since I've been fishing, so you know, I'm just only slightly insane right now.
Oh man, I would have a tick or something serious.
Yeah, I would. I know, like when I go back to revisit bodies of water, I'll go back and look at my waypoints and kind of see what time of year I was there fishing. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And usually I remember like how many fish I caught or, you know, what the size of the fish were, you know, or you kind of go back and you scroll through your photos by date, you know, and it's like, oh, I made this waypoint on September 18th. Okay. Go back in your phone. Look, what did I do September 18th? Oh, look, here's the fish that I caught probably on this spot. Cause I think it saves the date and the time you hit the, that, but I generally just look at the date, but
you know, maybe we should you know, reach out to some of these you know, like companies like Marantz and Hummingbird and whatnot, be like, yo, you know, it'd be really cool as if, like, you know, when you're saving a waypoint, it has the option to either like type in information with it as well, or just do like a little short audio recording.
Yep. You heard it here first. That is copyrighted, trademarked. Do not infringe. Please reach out to Brian Schiller, Susie Roloff, or Sean Lavery for our permission and to get our royalty fee sent to us.
Next $1 million idea right there.
There we go. Protecting us, guys. That's why it is.
That's
nice.
Right. Yep. there's got to be an app for that, right? I mean, why not?
The Susie Q update.
Yeah,
like it.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, well, we're coming up on an hour here, so, you know, like to, you know, definitely encourage all you listeners, especially those guys who are fishing the noobs tournament, to get out there, hit that fall bite as, you know, it starts to fire up. We still got a couple of maybe 2 weeks left in September, a little less than 2 weeks. So and I'm looking at the leaderboard. We have No Gwyn, who's got 87 and a quarter inches, and I'm tied for second right now with 87 inches with Tom Arntz. He's got me by big fish, though, so definitely
Well, I was going to say, I'm really sorry. I haven't judged in a while.
Oh, so maybe I'm not sitting as pretty as I should be.
Yeah, I haven't looked at anything in a hot minute. I've had some crazy things happening in the last 2 weeks. My she shed has progressed so rapidly. It's like been insane. Like, we went from having nothing done to spray foam insulation, walls put up, sanded, all the windows framed, installed and framed, the AC installed, the siding done and everything. And it just got painted a couple days ago. So we just took in the table, the wall fan, the wall heater, and the garage door opener. And then now I got to clean the floor and get ready for paint on the floor, on the concrete floor. And then we'll be ready to move cabinets in and everything. So it's been a little hot mess lately. So I just, like, I don't know what day it is or anything like that, because I was out with my shoulder surgery for a while too. So I'm just like, it's middle of September now. Like, I don't.
It's been a blur for, I'm sure.
Yeah, gosh, it has totally been a blur. Like, I don't know how it's September. It's just, it's crazy. Yeah.
It's moving.
Shoot.
But anyway, guys, so definitely try and hit the water again. You know, definitely is now not the time to put everything away, because it's just starting to get fired up. So make sure you get out there on the water. We'll keep you guys updated on how the September tournament goes, and then we'll have the new champion of
championship.
Yeah, so that should be exciting too. So all the previous month's winners will get to face off and see who gets to be the grand champion, and maybe get to hang out with us at Dale Hall.
That's right. And don't forget, you know, the championship isn't your typical month-long championship. So we're going to set out a certain time frame of about, I think we did what, like nine days last year. So.
9 days, because it was two weekends in the week.
That's right.
In between those two weekends.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be setting out a certain time frame, but the real trick is you only get to choose
one of those days
to fish. So, and once you choose that day, you can't go back and change it. So plan wisely.
That definitely throws a wrinkle in there. Yep.
It does. It sure does.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for tuning in for another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs. We'll be back next week with another exciting episode. We'll see who we can get to come on, but I know it's going to be good. So hang tight with us. And as always, thanks for listening.
We're bringing you the tips, the tricks to help you rip more lips.
That was kind of it, but
I missed something in there, right?
That's enough for who it's for, right?
The techniques.
The techniques, the tips, the tricks to you rip more lips.
There you go. The OG himself bringing you the tagline, guys.
That's right.
Woo!
Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Good night, guys.
Peace out, Girl Scouts. Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.